the police applied for 2 grants so far to put up surveillance cameras in residential neighborhoods in the Syracuse area. What was a little disturbing is that the first neighborhood that was selected for these cameras was a high minority, low income neighborhood that happened to be the neighborhood with the most number of Spanish-speaking people from the Latino community. There were a lot of concerns about these surveillance cameras, and because of my efforts and the efforts of some of my grassroots allies, there was actually a bit of a democratic debate and the public voicing their concerns about these cameras.
And so do you think that this group was targeted because they wanted to surveil them, or because they thought there would be less movement against, from less opposition from them?
Well, what the police did is they did a map of the areas in Syracuse where there had been high numbers of calls to the police for gunshots fired. And there were a number of different neighborhoods, many of them minority, many of them low income. But the first neighborhood that they said that they selected was the neighborhood with the highest proportion of Spanish speakers in Syracuse. It was one of a number of neighborhoods with high shots fire calls.
Mm-hmm. And what is your organization doing in response to this?
Well, a lot of the work on this has already been done. One of the things that we fought for was that the police shall not simply put up surveillance cameras in a neighborhood without having a meaningful dialogue with the people that live in the neighborhood first. And that happened largely because of the pushback from my organization and some of our community allies, and several community forums were held in the neighborhood. And frankly, the police got an earful about the problems with police-community relations in the neighborhood. A lot of the problems had to do with the neighborhood's lack of trust for the police because of the way the police conduct themselves in that neighborhood. Another thing that we pushed for was to make sure that before these cameras are put up, that there is either an ordinance or clear police policy limiting their use, misuse, and potential abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And we got that.
And what did that policy look like?
Well, the initial draft of the policy was something the police were reluctant to share with the community until our grassroots mobilization efforts pushed and pushed and pushed to say it's not enough to release a outline of the policy. We want to see the actual text. And eventually the police did release the actual text, and it's a standard police policy. But in draft form, it still had many, many, many issues in it, including an appearance that the camera recordings and the cameras themselves might be shared with other law enforcement agencies, including immigration.
Mm-hmm.
So I met personally with the deputy chief and the chair of the Common Council's Public Safety Committee to communicate about 60 items of concern within the draft policy, and the police went back to the drawing board and revised the policy, and we expect the revised policy to come out in 2 or 3 weeks, and for it to come out before any cameras are put up. However, my feedback from the police department is that they accepted about 80% to 85% of the suggested revisions that I gave them, which is productive, frankly.
Right. And if the department agrees to not share this information with other departments like ICE, and then they end up sharing it and something comes of that, then what happens legally?
Well, if the police have a policy that says that they can do this, then there's not a whole lot that you can do on the basis of the policy. So one of the things we have to continue to push for is that the policy not give them the ability to do that, and that involves still grassroots mobilization and lobbying, because right now one of the things that the police have not changed is the idea that the cameras could be used to identify people suspected of being undocumented immigrants. And I'm still going round and round with the city attorney and the police on this, because in fact, local police have no business attempting to, on their own, enforce or investigate violations of immigration law, because presence in the United States without documentation is not a crime. It's a violation of civil federal law. And frankly, it's a matter of federal law enforcement, not local law enforcement.
So that would be the similar to local cops doing things to police medical marijuana in states where it's legal, but the federal has a problem with it?
It's not so much that. It would be an example of, let's say that there was a violation of the civil laws that was alleged for libel or slander. Well, those are not really criminal things. They're mm-hmm. things that you can sue somebody for in a criminal court.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like the police enforcing something like that. It's like apples and oranges.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a matter of criminal law. Now, if somebody re-enters the United States after having been deported and they do so without documentation, that's a crime. But simple undocumented presence in the United States is not a crime. It's a civil violation.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that this is a trend that's going to continue with more cameras in more parts of Syracuse?
Well, that was part of what happened in the public dialogue that happened because of the community pushback and the pushback from my organization. We found out, and the police stated publicly, that it was their desire to put surveillance cameras all over Syracuse. And there's a lot of criticism of that. At the same time, there has been some serious incidents of gun violence in Syracuse. And in part because of the problems with police-community relations. The police have been, it's been difficult for the police to be able to investigate
mm-hmm.
these gun violence incidents, and even more difficult for them to prevent them from occurring. So, I mean, I will admit readily that there is a serious problem in Syracuse with gun violence. But as many people in the community forums expressed, the way to deal with that is to get police officers in the community, not police officers on poles with cameras.
Mm-hmm. So part of the problem of the police investigating these types of things is that there's no trust with the community, so people don't want to talk about what has or hasn't happened.
Well, I'm not saying there's no trust in the community, mm-hmm. because that is presupposing that there are no people in the Syracuse community that will speak with the police. I would say that the state of police-community relations in Syracuse in low-income and high-minority neighborhoods is quite poor.
Mm-hmm. And so how do other people who are not in the community where this is happening, how have they been vocal about...
Oh, absolutely. There have been people from across the city that have basically said that we do not want to have the police watching when we are outside our apartments, kissing our partners goodbye at the beginning of the day, or talking to our neighbors while we mow our lawns, or having all the innocent everyday interactions that we might have in front of our home. You know, we are not one nation under surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
There is a principle in the United States that you're not supposed to be put under police investigation or surveillance unless you're actually suspected of criminal activity. So the idea that the police would put cameras in residential neighborhoods when there's no suspicion of the people that live specifically in the areas where the cameras are focused really runs directly against a core American principle, which is, leave me alone if you don't suspect me of anything. And, you know, there's also another concern with these cameras, which is that they have the ability to rotate, they have the ability to turn, to tilt up and down, to zoom. And so these are pretty high-tech instruments that could be misused and abused to really peer at people's private activities.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what the cost of this system is to the taxpayers there?
Yes, it is based on the grant, and I don't have that figure at the top of my head. I think that it is something like $125,000. However, that's covered by a grant, and, mm-hmm. and don't hold me to that exact number because I don't have my file on the surveillance program right in front of me right now. But realize this is paid for a grant. This is not something that's coming out of local taxpayer dollars. This is being paid by a federal grant. However, the second bunch of cameras mm-hmm. is being funded through a Department of Homeland Security grant, and yet where they're putting it is in a subsidized housing project. Mm. So, again, it raises questions about who are you surveilling and why. Now, the grant is to protect crucial infrastructure, and yet I don't know why the Pioneer Homes housing complex would be considered crucial infrastructure.
Right.
So the police say they're pointing it up at the dome. And, okay, I don't see Syracuse as a major terrorist target, but if it was, yes, the dome would be a potential target. And yet you're putting these cameras in another low-income, high-minority neighborhood, and that really raises some serious questions.
Uh-huh. Well, as you said earlier, that it sounds like this type of activity is illegal. Is there anything further that can be done within a court to restrict the cameras from being put up?
Well, what are you saying is illegal? The fact that there is surveillance?
Right, to be surveilling people in their everyday lives.
Well, realize there's two ways to fight in court against something that you allege violates constitutional rights.
Mm-hmm.
You could challenge it on its face and say, on its face, this seems like it violates people's rights. But with a program that's going to be surveilling a whole lot of people, whose rights specifically are being violated? I just don't think that a facial challenge against this would necessarily be successful, especially since there are surveillance cameras all over major cities, including Rochester. There's like 140 cameras in Rochester. So the second way to challenge it would be an as-applied challenge. In other words, the way that these specific cameras were applied in a specific situation involving specific people violated their rights. And the problem with that is you've got to wait till they implement it and then find somebody who was harmed because of the nature or method of surveillance and then challenge the program.
Mm-hmm.
But there are surveillance cameras that are being implemented in cities throughout the United States, Canada, the UK, elsewhere in Europe.
And where are these cameras in Syracuse? They're all sending a live feed to the police department? Is that the idea?
Well, what's going to happen is there's nine of them that they're able to fund through this first grant. And one camera will send a wireless signal to another camera, and then that camera to the next camera, and then that camera to the next camera in a daisy chain fashion until the signal reaches a receiver housed in a Syracuse school. And then from that receiver, it will send the live feed. It will send a live feed to the police department, but the police are saying that they're not going to be watching these images in real time. They're only going to be looking at recorded images and only when there's a request in relation to a particular investigation. So I have real questions about how that's going to prevent any crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds reasonable. And why is it being housed in the school, this main place that all the images are going to?
Well, the reason is that there is an existing network of surveillance cameras that are placed outside Syracuse schools and in particular high-traffic areas. And the police department has access to that security feed within the schools. So rather than try to replicate a new system, the police felt it would be cheaper and more efficient to piggyback on the system that was already sending images from the schools to the police.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that's fiscally responsible in some ways.
When I went to high school, there was no security cameras there. And so when I saw them get introduced, it reminded me of someone who talks about using the system of bells in school to prepare children for the to work in the mills. So now using surveillance cameras in schools to prepare children to grow up in a police state.
Well, there is that implication. I mean, I think we are not really aware of the occurrence of how many cameras there are in our everyday life. Every supermarket, every convenience store, every gas station, every bank, every ATM. We're really blanketed by a system of private and public cameras that are really putting our everyday lives under surveillance. Where this crosses a line is that this is putting a residential neighborhood under surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, crosses a line that really warrants the public to speak out and seek limits for the application of this technology. I mean, I think there is a feeling among some in Syracuse, especially those who are politically aware and politically active, that we don't want to be one city under surveillance.
Mm-hmm. The cameras are transmitting the information wirelessly. Was that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. That was just a clarification on that.
Mm-hmm. And it's a secure network, but it is a wireless system.
Mm-hmm. And so, do the people who are in the community, how are they feeling now that you have revised some of the implications of how the system will be used?
Well, at this point, I'm the only one besides the police who has seen any indication that there are going to be revisions to that there are actual revisions to the policy. So at this point, I am waiting until the police release that from the council and trying to ensure that when this is released to the city council, that there is another opportunity for public input before this system goes live. And, you know, a couple of really important things happened here from a grassroots point of view. There would have been no public dialogue had we not pushed back. There would have been nothing but the policy that the police wrote as they wanted to write it if we had not pushed back. And the police would have put up the cameras before the policy was even finished if we had not pushed back. And the council also gave us assurances that a similar democratic process of community forums in the communities where the people are, not at the stone tower that is our city hall downtown, that would happen any time more cameras were put up. So I think there's some important grassroots community transparency principles that we won in this battle. Did we stop the cameras? No. Did we get some public accountability that is really crucial to keep our communities and our neighborhoods free? Yeah, I think we did.
That's wonderful. Do you know who is backing the original grant, this $125,000-ish?
The first grant is a Department of Justice grant, and the second grant is a Department of Homeland Security grant.
And do you know what the implications were of the first grant? For what reasons was the money to be spent?
I have not actually seen the grant application, and there's other people in my group of allies in this United as One cross-cultural civil rights coalition that are looking into that.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else concerning this that I haven't touched upon?
No, I want to really emphasize how important it is for the people to be actively acting as watchdogs for their legislature and for pushing back when there are issues of community concern. Had we not been watching what the council was doing, the police could have slipped this item in and got approval for it without any community input because of the way that the process works in this legislature and many others. So we really need to remain vigilant and vocal to ensure that there's a balance between law enforcement interests and community interests.
Do you know when this first came up, when people first became aware that the cameras were going to be installed, and how they became aware of it?
Yeah, that's an interesting story, because this item of approving the acceptance of the funding, because there's a couple of steps in the legislative process. You've got to approve the acceptance of the funding, and then you've got to approve the expenditure of the money, and that's two different votes in the council. And I was actually alerted to this item by a legislator who recognized the item as problematic and brought it to my attention, so that I started going to every single common council meeting, except, you know, rather than just the periodic ones where there was an issue I was aware of. So this was a legislator elected to protect the interests of the people who was actually doing that, and she alerted me, and then I alerted my civil rights allies in the community, and began to work with others to organize a response and put pressure on the council. So this was an alert legislature and an alert public, an alert legislator and an alert public actually working together. In some ways, it's the best of democracy.
And so that's the importance of going to your common council meetings.
Yeah, and also developing relationships with common councilors that you see as allies, or senators or assembly people that you see as allies, or county legislators, so that if you can't be at every single legislature meeting monitoring what they're doing, that you have a communication so that key questions will be asked when they need to be asked. And that's really a cooperative relationship between legislators and the public.
And when was it exactly that this all came to your attention? What month was that?
Oh, it was over last summer.
Okay.
And I have been working on it ever since, and I'm still watchdogging it now. At this point, my current move is to keep my community allies apprised of the status and to make sure that the council demands that the police not put up these cameras until there's been an opportunity to adequately revise and get public input into the revised policy. So that's sort of where I am now. The cameras are going up, but we want to make sure that a good, solid policy is in place before they do.
And so you became aware of it in the summer. When was it that the first major action or injunction against it occurred?
Well, again, there was no action, there was no injunction, there was no legal action.
Right.
There was public discourse and public questioning. The first thing that happened was an item got onto the council agenda, or was placed on the council agenda at the request of the police to accept the funding. And that's when this legislator started asking questions and doing research about the pros and cons of surveillance cameras. When I began to be particularly active in pushback and grassroots organizing was when the next item came on the council agenda, and that was to actually expend the money.
And after that, was there any further actions on the timeline, or that's pretty much...
Well, it's interesting, because partially because of my pushing, they did hold a public hearing on the first item, and the police said publicly there are no other concrete plans to put any other surveillance cameras anywhere else in Syracuse. And then the very next day, a second surveillance item appeared on the council agenda to put new surveillance cameras in a second high-minority, low-income neighborhood. So essentially, at the public hearing, the police lied. And because I was present in the council chamber when that item was brought to the council in a study session, I caught that and raised a bit of a ruckus.
And so was the police department confronted about that lie, and did they have an explanation for it, or that didn't?
I asked public questions about it, and some of the councilors did express their ire that there was one statement said that wasn't true. I mean, the police should not be knowingly saying that there's no other concrete plans when they absolutely know that there is. One of the things that really degrades public trust and cooperation of police is when people perceive that the police prevaricate or lie. And so I think that that was an extremely bad PR move on behalf of the Syracuse police. And I really think that transparency and accountability really is positive when it comes to the police, because it increases community support and trust of the police. I mean, some of this is really basic to police-community relations.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning.
You're very welcome. I'm always happy to talk about public activism and advocacy.
Well, I appreciate the education, and it seems very clear what the implications of this are and how we should be vigilant as citizens, keeping an eye on our legislatures.
That's crucial to democracy. Always was, always will be.
Well, thank you very much, and take care.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.